listeners, and thank you for tuning in to the latest episode of Out of Left Field. I'm one of your co-hosts, Anthony, and as always, joined by my two delightful co-hosts, Ben.
What's up, everyone? Recording for duty.
And Mac.
Yep, here again, as per usual.
And we are recording from the Gulag Archipelago of Soviet Kanuckistan, otherwise known as beautiful Vancouver Island, British Columbia. And if you are a returning listener or a new listener, you can do us a big favor by hitting like, follow, share, subscribe, hit all of the buttons on all of the platforms that you can find our podcast on, iTunes, SoundCloud, Spotify, wherever you happen to get your podcast entertainment. Out of Left Field is also part of the Ricochet Media Podcast Network, which features other fantastic pods like our friends over at Alberta Advantage, 49th Parahel, and Kino Lefter Movie Review. And please, if you like what we're doing, consider going on over to our Patreon page and punt us a buck or two to buy beers every month. It's really important for us to be able to continue delivering the content and grow the podcast. Any amount helps. We will post the link in the show notes, as always. Now, today we're bringing you an episode about some recent union-crushing shithousery that's been going on at Whole Foods, a division of the Dragon capitalist
Hydra.
Jeff Bezos. Sorry?
It's a Hydra. It's a
the draconic Hydra that is Jeff Bezos, inserting himself into all facets of the market. We're joined by a couple of guests who have been on the ground in and around the movement to unionize at Whole Foods and are going to talk to us about their struggles and where the movement is at. We are joined today by Matt and Tyler. Guys, how's it going?
Good.
Thanks so much for having us.
Yeah, thanks for being on the show.
Well, thanks so much for coming on. Just to kind of get us started here, maybe you could provide us and our listeners with some of the background context to get the whole story here. Can you tell us about Whole Foods and Amazon, both your histories there and when it was that this unionization drive started out and what some of the things motivating it were?
So, yeah, I started working at Whole Foods back in 2014 and I didn't go in there with the intent to unionize it, but I immediately saw the conditions and essentially on day one, I decided I was going to start organizing. Conditions from wages to just even the general safety of the store were pretty much atrocious. I was organizing, agitating. I eventually reached out to a labor union, which was the USCW, United Food and Commercial Workers. We began signing cards. Eventually, someone snitched on me, and they began holding captive audience meetings. Someone threatened to run me over with a car, too. That was kind of cool.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. Anti-union violence still exists in this country. Yeah, so that happened. A whole lot of other rat fucking, as you can put it. Eventually, I was terminated, as well as my fiance, on the same day. In January of 2017. And so just to remind people that this was all before Amazon actually came in and bought the company. So I never had to experience the horrors that the current employees are going through, but I was there while Whole Foods was still slightly better than it was now, but I would argue it was still a pretty awful company.
And Tyler, what about you?
I started working at Whole Foods in about 2010 or 2011. I had lost my job in the recession of 2008. And I'd never kind of considered working for Whole Foods. I shopped there and I'm kind of a foodie otherwise, I guess. But I started working there. And initially, I really loved it. I loved the company. I loved their core values. And at the time, it was a very different place. What got me started, there were a couple rounds of layoffs. And then this started in 2016, I believe, 2017, the business really started to struggle and things really started to change. One of my good friends was laid off in 2018, I believe, and kind of the years leading up to that had just been a constant, just kind of, you know, backpedaling, like our hours were constantly being cut, you know, our hours would be cut. We'd be given just constantly more responsibilities, more to do with kind of less resources. It just more and more, especially after this first and second rental layout, it just really became kind of a toxic place to work. Let's say a toxic company, and just, you know, no leadership come to the top, and just, I could go on forever about it, but it was that moment of my friend being laid off. I just kind of, I'd had enough, came home that night. I'd never really thought seriously about labor organizing. I've always been very left wing, but I basically came home and just started kind of doing some research about how I could protect my identity online, things I could do. And I basically got on Twitter and essentially just started kind of screaming the top of my lungs. I was just very angry. And I was sick of the hypocrisy. I'd say like the cardinal sin of Whole Foods, I believe, is just the outright hypocrisy, because they claim to be this very upstanding company, so, you know, the highest quality food, and to have these really great partnerships with their vendors and their employees. And my experience, that just couldn't be further from the truth. It's really the hypocrisy that gets me. But I came home and kind of started doing that. And over the next couple months, I started meeting people. I met Matt. We started meeting a lot of different reporters. We developed a relationship with the Wall Street Journal of all places.
Not the Washington Post, I guess. That was out of the cards.
But we wanted to start a labor movement, and it was kind of born kind of that summer. And we had a lot of, I think we were just really fortunate. We encountered a lot of people in like the national media who basically, like, Whole Foods is kind of a beloved brand. That's one thing I think that really kind of helped us. There are a lot of people, a lot of reporters that want to write about Whole Foods and Amazon. And they want to tell that story. And there's a lot of people that care about like the brand of Whole Foods. So when they would write articles, they would like be really successful for them. So we met a lot of people who were kind of interested in what was going on. And there was a real culture of silence at Whole Foods and not talking to the media and, you know, not airing our dirty laundry, all sorts of stuff. So I think there were reporters trying to kind of learn kind of what was going on. And we were able to kind of use that for our advantage. So how Whole Workers started, and that's kind of the name of our movement, is we sent out an email kind of announcing our intentions to unionize, that we felt that there had never been a better time to unionize. There had never been more reasons. We kind of aired some of our grievances and issues and just, you know, kind of what had gone on. And the same morning, we'd coordinated with the Wall Street Journal. They put out an article right when we were sending our email out. And then that next couple of months was very interesting. It led up to when Amazon increased the minimum wage in the U.S. to $15 an hour. In those first few months, we kind of got connected with people in the Bernie Sanders campaign and AOC and Elizabeth Warren. And that prompted them to, it was one of the contributing factors of them putting public pressure on Amazon, which led to the minimum wage. And I guess a lot of stuff happened really fast. It was kind of fascinating to us. They really kind of reacted to our agitation, to what we did. And we started kind of growing in numbers. And when you do any kind of labor organizing in any of these large corporations, it immediately puts an enormous target on your back. We encounter people all the time who are terrified of organizing. If you live paycheck to paycheck, you know, you live in fear of losing your job, of doing anything that's going to like get you fired or, you know, sever your, you know, source of income. So we, you know, have to kind of deal with like a lot of fear, but we wanted to kind of broadcast our message. So I was leaving, and on my last day, I sent an email out to the entire company, to literally like tens of thousands of people, and kind of broadcasted our message and told everyone kind of what we had done up to that point, who we were, what we were about, what we thought. And then I left, and the movement kind of goes on. I very passionately feel that, you know, just in this day and age, in the, you know, face of just relentless capitalism, relentless greed, like, I just very strongly believe that organized labor has to make a big comeback, whatever form that takes.
And just to briefly clarify for our listeners, we're connecting with both of our guests today from south of the border in the United States. But much like the private flow of capital, it seems like shitty labor conditions transcend borders in this post-national global economy that we live.
Very much so.
Certainly.
So, I was under the impression kind of initially that, like, just based on what I had read in the media, that, you know, once Amazon took over and acquired Whole Foods, that's when all of the awful labor stuff started happening. But by the sounds of it, it predated Amazon's acquisition. And I just want to illustrate that with a quote from an article from Business Insider, which states, I wake up in the middle of the night from nightmares about maps and inventory. The stress has created such a tense working environment. Seeing someone cry at work is becoming normal, said one Whole Foods employee who spoke with Business Insider. My question is, what the fuck? Like, how does, like, that sounds like an actual nightmare. Like going, like, from what I've heard, the managers will parade people around stores and give them pop quizzes about inventory and stock and what are the most popular items in a particular, you know, category. And if they fail the pop quiz, then they can get fired. Like, that sounds like an actual nightmare that someone would have about work. Can you elaborate on some of the atrocious, like, terrifying kind of management stuff and as you put it, rat fucking at Whole Foods?
Absolutely. Well, I would say, first off, labor conditions absolutely were horrible before Amazon came in, without a doubt. Whole Foods really, I think, started to go downhill in 2014, 2015. And that's a whole other story. That's when Walmart and Costco in particular, that was the first year, I believe 2015, when they outsold Whole Foods and organic and natural food. And it spooked Whole Foods investors. That article you mentioned, I really loved and appreciated that article. We reached out to the person we worked with. I believe that was Haley Peterson that wrote that from Business Insider. She was terrific.
Yeah.
That marked the last time I ever had a conversation with my leadership. Whole Foods was soul crushing. It was soul crushing. It was a nightmare because so many people did love the company. It was when I started there, it was I'd never worked for a company that really kind of practiced their values and kind of walked the talk, if that makes sense. There was a lot I really loved about the company back then, particularly like they had very good benefits, competitive wages, profit sharing. It was a good place to build a career, which is what a lot of people wanted to do. As things kind of deteriorated and it became more toxic and people kind of opened their eyes, it was soul crushing for a lot of people. One of my best friends was a team leader in the store I worked at, and I frequently saw her break down and cry after dealing with like regional leadership and global leadership and just some of the expectations. And like, she'd have to work as a team leader, like these 60, 70 hour weeks at all hours, like of the day and night, just to keep things going, just because they were cutting back labor so aggressively and their costs and other parts of the business were so out of control. It was a nightmare. And I think it's just kind of this like loss of innocence or growing up or kind of believing in something, that something is good. And then just to have it change so kind of dramatically, it was hard. It was just very hard to watch. You know, I saw a lot of people break down and cry in those years. And I went and asked my store team leader about it, and we had a conversation, and he was just kind of like, you know, what do you expect? What can we do? Like, you know, we can't do anything. You know, it was kind of a pathetic conversation, and that was one moment where I was just like, they can't. Like, Their job is just to execute policy. You know, leaders at Whole Foods are not, you know, leaders. You can say, you know, leaders at Amazon, their job is simply to execute policy directives of their bosses. And those directives are simply to increase profits. One thing like I really want to make clear is in all this drama, everything like we're talking about here, Whole Foods was never unprofitable. And I think this is super important for everybody to understand. Whole Foods was never unprofitable. Amazon has never been unprofitable, I think, in a very long time, you know, probably, you know, since the early 2000s. The things like large corporations will do to stay profitable is insane. It's insanity. It's disgusting. The amount of people they throw under the bus and kind of lives they'll throw into chaos to maintain, not even just to maintain profitability, to grow profitability, to satisfy their investors. Throughout like this entire period of time from 2014, 15 and onward, Whole Foods is never unprofitable. And the cuts, like the belt tightening and how much kind of the bottom tier people would suffer just so that our executives would meet their financial targets is just disgusting. It's absolutely insane. And you get gaslit a lot in any of these corporations, you know, because you'll be told, like if you're a, you know, base employee, you're told, you know, we got to hit our we got to be profitable. We got to be profitable as a store. Otherwise, you know, we can't exist. We'll go out of business. And that, you know, may be true to an extent, but it's not just about turning a profit. It's about growing your profit. It's about growing your profit, you know, more than you did last year. And that just relentless pursuit of growth is a sickness, I think, all over, you know, the world. And that's one of the reasons why I believe so strongly in organized labor. But it's, I apologize too, it's kind of going on, but it was labor conditions had gotten bad for a long time and it got much worse under Amazon. I think I kind of stepped back last year and now I'm kind of getting more involved again with our movement and kind of what we're doing. Just, you know, this January, Whole Foods cut all medical benefits for all part-time workers. You know, I know so many people in the city where I live. I still have a ton of friends at Whole Foods who worked there part-time and had been there for a very long time, and now they don't have health insurance and they're terrified. And then a few weeks after that went into effect, just the other day, you know, Amazon obliterated their financial targets, and overnight Jeff Bezos is $13 billion richer. And we're like, I can't describe to you the anger and the rage that some people feel. Definitely got worse over after Amazon came into play. And it just blows my mind how much Amazon, Jeff Bezos, Whole Foods, and all those executives are willing to take from the bottom just to meet their financial targets. It's insane.
Yeah, one thing I was seeing here was this idea of the quizzes that employees had to go through, or like weird, I don't know, whatever you call them, metrics or whatever.
Scorecards,
things that are like measurements of productivity that isn't in and of itself in any way productive, like, you know, signs of productivity that you're supposed to exhibit versus the actual business itself. And I just want to say that that seems to always be sort of the thing that like really crappy companies end up doing, is they obsess over these weird details that are evidence of profitability. But the question I guess I would just want to ask is, like, how exactly did that sort of stuff work with the employee scorecards and things?
Matt, were you there when they rolled out OTS?
No, I was lucky enough where I never had to personally work with the OTS system. So I'm definitely not the best person to speak about it. But as far as I know, in a nutshell, it was this new ordering system where they basically wanted to make it where it would essentially make it go from the truck just right to the shelf without there being any waste. They didn't want to have stuff stored in the back. It was essentially bringing what the model of, you know, Amazon's, you order it and it's right there.
But
I mean, in a grocery store, that's just really not going to work, I think, realistically speaking. And it did also take away from a lot of the autonomy that people in like these teams that would do the ordering and grow this expertise in whatever product it was, they were losing that ability, or just that, even that little bit of autonomy. So it's just completely datafying. You know,
it was micromanagement on a scale I had never seen before. it really, to me, speaks of incompetence. I think Whole Foods woke up one day and they're like, wow, we really don't have a winning strategy anymore. We really don't know how to run like our stores and you know, be successful. And so they rolled out just this huge system of micromanaging. What it looked like where I was in the stores I worked at was literally every single space in the store they would like label and have the purpose. If you walked into the back room of a Whole Foods, I think even today, and it was certainly like this when I left last summer, every single square foot there'd be like a label or a clipboard or a sticker designating like what goes there, what goes here. They completely changed how they did carried like inventory in the back. They didn't want any inventory in the back because I get like they thought our waste was too much, which probably was. It really just spoke to kind of, I think, this sense of incompetence. It's kind of like throwing stuff to the wall, seeing what stick. But it was amazing. And it was very intense for everyone there. Everyone had a long list of all these things like go here, touch this shelf, open this box, put it like in this slot, check this, you've done this, you know, it has to look, you know, precisely like this, this goes here. It was like micromanaging every single one of your actions, you know, like if you're, say you're just like stocking shelf or you're stocking produce or you're working a meat, like you're doing all kinds of stuff to, you know, help your customers and stock the shelves. And it was trying to like measure and quantify every single one of those like actions. It was wild. And then like the certification process, they came up with a certification process for their stores. They wanted the stores to be OTS certified. And that was a nightmare. OTS. And particularly a lot of my friends who'd been there as long as I had, you know, were in leadership positions, like the hours they put in, you know, literally these like 80-hour weeks, you know, 12 hours a day, you know, every day. It was crazy.
Yeah, and a lot of employees ended up quitting or just being terminated because they had these ridiculous, and frankly, it's completely dystopian, this model that they're trying to put on people. And it's creating situations where they know that people are going to fail.
It was really an extreme thing done out of like fear, I thought. Like they woke up and they're like, wow, we need to like do something crazy to bring our costs in line or something. And
like get rid of warehouses. Just that seems very crazy.
Mm-hmm. And by the way, for our listeners, OTS stands for order to shelf. So that was the effort by Whole Foods to eliminate the, you know, back storeroom essentially, which I mean counterintuitively or ironically seemed to result in empty shelves all across Whole Foods stores.
Oh yeah, yeah. Yep. Yeah, that was
New York City. It's nuts.
That problem now, I think that's been in the news, hasn't it? Like, I'm not super familiar with what's been going on, but one of their big national suppliers like closed down and now there's empty shelves all over the, you know, company, and, you know, large part and due to they really just changed how their back stock and warehousing worked. And it's kind of interesting.
Yeah, I think that was the UNFI supplier, which maybe we'll talk about some of their labor actions and how that all ties in being one of the major suppliers of Whole Foods, moving on down the episode a little bit.
I've written about them.
Yeah, I think that what each of you just said about the order to shelf system really speaks volumes about an important point to address when we're talking about the automation of the workplace under capitalism. A lot of the fears that people have and a lot of what gets talked about typically falls on how it renders the working class precarious, putting people out of their jobs, all in pursuit of extending those ever shrinking profit margins for the business owners. But, you know, less often we talk about, and Marx wrote about this as well, about the alienation of the worker in the workplace and how all of these automation technologies really, as each of you said, rob the workers of their autonomy and set them up to fail if they practice anything less than this kind of machinic precision that doesn't really leave any space for creativity, much less for socializing with your fellow workers or for error. Yeah, I can remember times when I worked at the factory warehouse at a local grocer here, and we had these electronic headsets we were supposed to speak into every time we were pulling stock off of or restocking a shelf. And that little technological innovation, which was designed to maximize efficiency, actually prevented any of the workers from just talking to each other, because there was no way to turn this headset off. You would speak into it saying hi to your buddy, and then it fucks up your count. So, you know, the way that these things actually work on the floor always plays out differently. But if I could just kind of awkwardly bridge that into another question here about other ways in which Amazon and Whole Foods are attacking the workers by regarding them as essentially non-human apparatchiks in the chain of production. Were they attacks to medical benefits? They're also attacks to wages, but the medical benefits for part-time employees who had their hours cut, I believe it was a big issue leading up to the current round of organizing that we're seeing. And, you know, this, in spite of the fact that Jeff Bezos as an individual makes more money than every single other retail worker in the United States combined. So what do you think the role of these cuts to medical benefits and any other benefits were? Did you see any of these cuts before Amazon acquired the company, or was that really a new level of barbarism introduced by Bezos?
I would say it was a kind of a continuation. I think it's gotten more extreme under Amazon, but they were already heading down that road. They were already making a lot of cuts to benefits and profit sharing, and you know, Whole Foods just had very, you know, pretty amazing benefits package for retail, and they're very kind of ahead of the curve. You know, this was 10 years ago. It got more extreme under Amazon.
Yeah, I think I was a part-time employee, and I believe my deductible was like $3,500. And if you're a part-time employee at Whole Foods, that's like a fourth and at least like a fifth of your income. No one's going to be able to afford that. And that's not even counting what's taken out of your paycheck to pay out for your health care. Do Canadians know what deductibles are?
Vaguely.
My Yankee imperialist girlfriend has tried to explain to me many times what a deductible and a copay is. And I
still don't even know if they're good or bad, or if you want them larger or smaller.
I don't understand. She's tried to explain this to me like seven times, and I just don't fucking get it.
It's basically a deductible is an amount your insurance provider sets. They set an arbitrary amount, say it's $2,000. What it means is that you have to pay $2,000 before they'll step in and pay for anything.
God,
your deductible is what you have to pay first.
Okay, so it's bad if it's higher.
Yeah, a large deductible, you know, like Matt was saying, if you're a part-time worker and you have, a $3,500 deductible, you effectively don't have health insurance, because anytime you needed to go to the doctor or get a prescription or anything, you have to meet your deductible first. So like they'll take your insurance and they'll say they're billing your insurance, but then the insurance, they'll turn around and this person's not met as a deductible, and you have to pay every cent before the deductible comes in. And then even after you meet your deductible, there's still a split, you know, and the split got worse over time. You know, insurance might pay 90% after deductible, you pay 10. That got worse, 80-20, 70-30. I couldn't speak to how it is now.
It's I flat out deny shit too. That's the thing.
No one wants to know how American health insurance works.
Does it work?
It's horrible.
Well, I think that was a pretty decent explanation. I imagine I'm still going to be completely confused by the American,
everybody
quote unquote system.
Yeah,
again.
Everyone is confused by
it.
So
I don't know.
On another note, so can you guys describe some of the union busting tactics that you saw employed by Whole Foods? Matthew, you forwarded me a tut-tutting, scathing kind of fear campaign, scare campaign. You know, kind of notice that Whole Foods put out shortly after one of your coworkers narked on you about how unions are bad and Whole Foods is a non-union company and so on and so on.
Yeah, so this was a letter that had the store manager's name on it, but I can guarantee you he did not write a single word of it. I'm sure whatever union busting law firm they had hired had written it. And so what it basically just goes on to tell you is that, you know, unions really, they're not in your interests. They're kind of just doing this so that they can make money. I forget what the term they use is. Declining services industry. That's what they call labor unions.
That's a grammatically strange. Okay.
I'm sorry. I have a lot of problems with establishment labor unions. A lot of problems. Do they have at-will employment up in Canada? I don't believe you do. I believe you had some kind of just cause. Is that correct?
Right to work, as it's called, does not exist here.
Sort of. A lot of our labor laws are actually way worse than in America, though. Like, ununionized workers have no right to strike here. At all.
I mean, we have something in Canada called the Charter of Rights and Freedoms, and in it enshrines the right to collectively bargain. So there's the right to of freedom of assembly, but that doesn't stop the governments from legislating workers, back to work when they go on strike, including, CUPW, Canadian Union of Postal Workers, federal employees. So it's mostly just a facade.
Okay. Yeah. Postal workers here also can't go on strike. And that was implemented, I think, in the 70s, there was a huge mass strike, and I believe they brought in either the Army and the National Guard, and it was a total fucking shit show, and they made sure that postal workers can never strike again. And now they're going to try and privatize the post office, of course.
Naturally, yeah.
Yeah, lovely, lovely shit. But so right to work is actually different from at-will employment. At-will employment is basically the standard that we have in the U.S. You know, you have some state laws that can protect people based on like a company policy that gives them some just cause when it comes to whether or not someone can be fired. But at will basically means your employer can fire you for any reason, as long as it's not, say, based on your race, your gender, your religion. And another exception is they can't fire you for trying to unionize. But of course, a boss can just make something up. They can be a totally racist piece of shit and just fire you and say that, I don't know, they didn't like your smile. They didn't think you were personable with customers.
Well, you didn't hit your stats, right? Like the classic one.
Oh, yeah, exactly. They can just flat up make something up. And that's essentially what they did to fire me and fire my fiance. And, you know, it couldn't have been more obvious that they did it because we were both advocating to try and unionize the place. We were wearing union buttons for months on end, and they still felt that they could go ahead and do this. And the sad thing is that the labor laws we have in this country really don't protect us, because there's really no repercussions. You know, you can bring a suit, you can go through the National Labor Relations Board, you can maybe get your job back, get a small settlement, but how many people actually want to go through that process? It takes a long time. I'm sure it physically and mentally drains people. You are starting to see some articles being put out about just how shitty labor law is in this country, and it's nice to start seeing that, because I would say the laws are so bad in this country that it effectively makes it near impossible to try and unionize.
Well, and that's by design as well, right?
No, absolutely, absolutely.
I'd like to ask a bit of a follow-up question, if I can, on that union busting. And this is specifically more for Matt. You wrote a couple of articles about this right-wing union busting consultancy firm called Culture Incorporated, which is a limited liability corporation, which we could talk about again later, that corporate structure and how it serves these kind of right-wing consultancy groups. It seems like they were hired not only by Whole Foods in 2016, it was, I believe, but also hired to come into UNFI, that's United Natural Foods Incorporated, to peddle their anti-union propaganda between the years of 2010 and 2018. And you wrote a lot about the various ties to far-right figures that this consultancy firm has. So can you tell us a little bit about who Culture is? This is Culture with a K, so it's different. Who Culture is, where they come from, and what their practices look like?
Yeah, so Culture Consulting is run by this guy, Peter List, and he used to be involved in the labor movement. I believe he was a member of Communication Workers. And this is actually a really common thing you'll see with these union busing consultants, which are totally legal to hire in the United States, is that a lot of them actually used to work in the labor movement, which is deeply depressing. I'm sure that a lot of them go into the labor movement specifically to learn how the process works and then, you know, essentially go do their thing and make money. So some of them are just complete fucking sociopaths is what I'm saying. While probably some others do actually go through it, and maybe they really do get disheartened with the failures of American labor. Let's be honest. It's been a failure. It's not just that there's been such a right-wing attack on labor. It's also that a lot of labor leaders and presidents, they are part of the neoliberal class. They've joined the professional class, essentially. They're labor aristocrats, I guess you can call them. Culture was hired by Umfi, which also happens to be Whole Foods' biggest supplier.
It's so like blood-boilingly maddening to me, this whole idea of the limited liability corporation. It just seems so transparent that the corporation itself can't engage in union busting activities. It's illegal, so they hire this corporation, which due to its legal structuring can't exactly be held liable for any illegal or just outright shitty advice that it might happen to give. And so, you know, it's this one degree of separation that saves face for these this egregious crackdown on the working class. It's horrific. It's infuriating.
It's all nice and legal,
right? Yeah.
They do technically have to file these reports, which I think they're called the LM-20s or something, with the Department of Labor, but most of the time these union busting firms, they don't file them, and even though there's like a penalty, it's never fucking enforced. But meanwhile, labor unions, if say they fuck up on filing something, the Labor Department might come down on them and find, you know, start accusing them of corruption or find a reason to essentially bring them into trusteeship and fuck them over. So the labor laws in this country, the ones that we do actually have, are essentially there to help employers.
Well, yeah, that's an open secret.
Yeah.
One thing we wanted to ask both of you was that the outward face, the kind of corporate image that Whole Foods puts forward to the public is that they're a very progressive company, that they have good values and organic food, helping the environment, responsible, and so on and so forth, which, you know, really flies in the face of a lot of the things that you've been saying, both in this interview and, in various articles published by Business Insider and whatnot. So has that had any impact on how you organize or interact with the public, with the whole union drive, and just general criticism of Whole Foods, just kind of in general?
I was at the store I used to work at a few months ago, and they're actually right now. I mean, I would say it large part for Whole Foods, it's all talk. I think they do have really good food quality standards in for the most part, although those are changing. And as we've been recently learning, we're trying to get more information on that actually. As far as their, you know, they would say they're environmentally friendly and they have good relationship with their suppliers and their employees. I would just say there's a lot of hypocrisy. There's a lot of, there's a lot of things like we've been trying to expose and kind of blow the whistle on. And it boils down to a question of like, you know, to what extent like we can prove. But where I was working in the Western United States, many of our stores in our region, they stopped their municipal recycling agencies stopped picking up recycling at Whole Foods. This was happening back in 2016 and 2018. Could be still happening. I don't know. But basically, their local recycling municipalities would just stop picking up their recycling because no one was sorting their recycling, and it was just impossible for the recycling, you know, agencies to come and, you know, pick up, you know, anything outside of corrugated cardboard, but like, you know, food waste, plastics, I think mainly plastics, glass. It was kind of a disaster. And that came about directly because of just these extreme labor cutbacks and these just real, you know, draconian, the OTS thing, just the immense amount of micromanaging. They just, you know, couldn't do anything like that. They couldn't recycle. That stuff, I'd say, like, it's definitely helped our movement. There are a lot of people that, like, care about those things that work at Whole Foods. And I think more and more and more over time as people realize just how hypocritical the organization is. And that's kind of what has led them to get involved.
Yeah, and if I can speak to that, I think what's really interesting is, like you said, it's always had this sort of image of being a progressive company. And I guess to some extent, you know, they had a dress code policy that was maybe a little ahead of the times. You know, they paid a little bit better than the other grocery stores down the street, which in the grand scheme of things is still shit, poverty wages, but still a little better than the other ones. They did have profit sharing, which they eventually got rid of under Amazon. But when you actually really look at who John Mackey, the CEO of Whole Foods, is, he's anything but progressive, I guess you could say. You know, he's a libertarian.
He's a pretty hardcore libertarian.
Oh, you don't say.
That's so weird. Shocker.
He wrote a book called Conscious Capitalism that I think was the source of a lot of anger within Whole Foods. Because it's just such bullshit when you kind of peel away the layers and look at what they're actually doing. I really love that he followed up that, you know, that book with a cookbook, you know, I love from economics to a cookbook. That was
well,
good.
You know, when you've said all there needs to be said about economics, you might as well move on to the next genre.
Yeah. Do you know who Richard Wolff is, the economist?
Yeah.
So Mackey recently had a debate with him, and there was one person from Reason, and I forget their name, but from Jacobin on Richard Wolff's side. And eventually, at some point in the debate, and this is just to prove that John Mackey is really not that bright of a dude, he says that. So it's an argument about whether like socialism is a good thing. John Mackey gets to the point where he says World War II was started by the Nazis, which were socialists.
Oh, fuck off.
Oh, boy.
Shut up.
He wrote a whole book, and that's the kind of crap he'd say?
If you ever just, like, backed up and you just need to, like, throw up, you know, you just need to purge, you know, you can find on the internet an old faux debate between John Mackey and Milton Friedman, and you'll lose your lunch. It's the most sanctimonious. My God! And they were specifically, you know, debating Whole Foods at one point would donate, like, you know, they would say we donate 1% of our profit or 2% of our profit to, you know, charity, to, you know, whatever, you know, bullshit not-for-profit. That's a whole other thing. And they had this kind of fake debate on stage, and it's just God.
When you gotta drag Milton Friedman out to make yourself look good, you know, you're kind of scraping the bottom of the barrel there.
Well, yeah, and I mean, it doesn't even really need to be mentioned, but the only reason charity needs to exist at all is to cover an abject lack of social programs that taxes otherwise should be paying for.
Exactly.
Yeah. But Jeff Bezos needs to go to space.
Well, I say all power to him. He needs to just piss off to space.
Yeah, like, don't let the door hit you on the ass.
Maybe he can get inside one of those one-way Tesla rides to the sun.
that was one of kind of our messages. We had like a talking point or something last year. I can't remember if we put it exactly into the big email that I sent out that we wrote together. But, you know, Whole Foods talks about their core values. And we were just like, they're, you know, everyone who works at Whole Foods knows that, you know, today, right now, today, there is no core value at Whole Foods more important than, you know, Jeff Bezos, you know, being able to retire on Mars some days, you know, Lord of the Martian colony. Nothing is more important than increasing their profitability.
But he can't even keep his phone from being hacked. So how is he going to fly a rocket ship? That doesn't click to me.
This guy who runs the company, right? Like, I guess I just don't... I think we have one now in town, right? Whole Foods here?
We do. Near Uptown.
So we got one of them. That was fairly recent. And all I ever really knew about the company was just that it was vaguely, like, I don't know, granola, health food, something, something. Didn't really know anything else about it. And I guess the company as a whole is, at this point, pretty much just run like a feudal serfdom of the Amazon machine. But
that's a good way of putting it, yeah.
Like, it's just, that's what it is now. I guess, like, what is, like, is there really any kind of specific role for someone like this guy we were talking about, this CEO of Whole Foods? Like, is there anything for him to do anymore?
I would say that Whole Foods would like to say that they're still a separate organ, that they maintain some autonomy from Amazon. They want people to believe that. I'd say to a certain extent that's true. The benefits, for example, I can tell you why they canceled their benefits for part-time, you know, labor. Every executive who works at Whole Foods today is terrified that Whole Foods will become wholly absorbed into Amazon and that they'll lose their jobs. They have to hit, Whole Foods executives and regional leaders have to hit very specific, very stringent, like financial targets, labor targets, budget targets, costs, you name it. And they're terrified. I'd say most executives on that level, Whole Foods, are terrified that Amazon's going to come in and basically close the corporate office in Austin, Texas, and completely absorb Whole Foods. So I think they kind of play this perverse game of defense. And all the cost-cutting, you know, measures they implement are, you know, simply that. The main thing I think Amazon wants from Whole Foods, at least when I was there, primarily is to grow Prime as a brand. They want everyone who goes into a Whole Foods to get just kind of bombarded with Prime messaging, Prime advertising, that kind of thing. One of the real like disgusting things I saw kind of my last 6 months or so at Whole Foods is there's always a culture, like, you know, they talk about like the feel of shopping in a Whole Foods and they wanted it to be just this wonderful experience for customers. And that's, you know, kind of how it used to be. Part of that was like, they wanted us to really engage customers with like honesty and authenticity and not just speak for the company. So like, for instance, if we didn't carry a product, but maybe our competitor did, we would like refer them to them, you know, or even call that store and say, oh yeah, you can get that here. Like they really wanted this kind of genuine, there's a lot I used to love about Whole Foods. Amazon started circulating these talking points where like if you're on the floor, if you're working on the floor and you're talking to a customer, they want you to like, oh, have you seen this new show on Prime? Have you guys checked out you know, this show, or, you know, do you like that? I love that free shipping.
Oh, that's so cringe.
God, that's like
it felt so gross to a lot of people at Whole Foods because it was just so against the grain of how it used to be. It was just, you know, or just like asking everyone who comes through you, they're supposed to ask, you know, are you a Prime member? If a customer, if someone like goes into a Whole Foods, buys something and they're not asked, are you a Prime member? I think at least, I don't remember how they measured it, but it was like considered like a failing. Like everyone's supposed to be asked, are you a Prime member?
What are they?
That's really their kind of prevailing business.
That sounds absolutely horrible. I mean, the only thing worse I could think of is if you were ordered to, like, ask everyone who enters the store, hey, are you into bald guys? Because, you know, are you? Maybe.
Well, here. God, that reminds me of, like, a dystopian idea someone pitched at me once, where imagine going to a restaurant and the, you know, your waiter was contractually obligated to, like, advertise businesses to you before taking your order. Or imagine being in a hospital bed and being, you know, well, you don't have the premium ad-free hospital bed, so you have to sit there and lay back and watch ads while you're suffering of cancer or whatever. It's like, this is a literal fucking dystopia that you're describing here. I can't even. I don't even know what to say.
It doesn't sound like a very pleasant customer experience.
Can I just say something, like, for your listeners? I wish everyone would go and watch, like, the Last Week Tonight segment on Amazon and their labor practices, because I think this is important. At the end of the day, like, Whole Foods is a much better job in so many ways than working at Amazon Distribution Center. And we're only just beginning to understand. There's only, like, just kind of statistics coming out on this, on, like, injury rates, long, you know, incidents of, like, you know, these long-term chronic injuries and stuff that can happen if you work in an Amazon distribution center for 10 years. And it's on a par with working in a coal mine in the 1800s. Working in a coal mine is significantly, measurably safer than working in an Amazon distribution center.
You know, for a second there, I thought you were going to say all your listeners should watch Last Week Tonight on Amazon Prime.
But, that segment in particular, I thought he did a really good job. He also used a video, an anti-union video that we helped leak. Amazon's a scary company. They're a scary company. Amazon aspires to be the corporation that's in the movie WALL-E. Remember the Pixar movie WALL-E? And that there's that, you know, one, you know, monolithic corporation that kind of like ruined planet Earth. I mean, the greed and just like the relentlessness and doggedness that they'll just like chase profit is insane. And the amount of people that get injured and hurt thrown by the wayside is crazy.
Amazon wants to become the market themselves. They want to be the corporation that runs everything.
You know, one food company, one TV station, one warehousing network.
Yeah. And I think it's important to mention, just kind of to follow up on something that you mentioned earlier about, you know, the what's often driving a lot of the revoking of health insurance for part-time workers and other sort of like cutting back, cutting costs. What's motivating that is that these, you know, the bean counters, as you could call them, and the, you know, the higher up upper management are themselves terrified of losing their jobs. So it's not like what's driving this, to put it mildly, unethical behavior is individual, like the greed of individuals. It's like the system is what is driving the behavior of these people. It's not like, oh, if we just had better management, you know, all of the problems would go away. The issue is systemic. The issue is that, you know, as particularly as a publicly traded company, they are basically themselves contractually obligated to cut costs. It's not any individual greedy person. It's the environment, the system in which they reside. So I would like to ask both of you, for our listeners that maybe whether they work at Whole Foods or really anywhere else, and have to deal with bullshit from, you know, the company that they work for, maybe they want to explore the idea of organizing their workplace. What lessons have both of you taken from your experience in organizing Whole Foods, particularly you, Matt, who were, you know, terminated due to this? What advice would you give to anybody that might want to attempt this Herculean task of organizing their workplace?
Do the best you can, but it's going to take massive amounts of civil disobedience in this country to rebuild the labor movement. And I think that that's also going to come with the need to push for more progressive policies in this country, like Medicare for All. I mean, I think it's kind of a pipe dream if people think it's not going to be taking massive amounts of civil disobedience. And I think main lesson I learned, though, I mean, the grass is not always going to be greener on the other side. Whenever you talk to someone about, you know, trying to improve their workplace and, hey, maybe we should unionize, a very common response you get from people is that, oh, well, I don't plan to be here that long. Most people, whenever they say that, they usually end up staying there for a pretty long time.
Yeah.
But also, I mean, you know, we're not free to choose where we work, basically. You know, wage slavery is a real thing. It really is.
I had not actually myself considered the role that Medicare for All in the United States played in, you know, the organized labor movement, because, you know, now that you mentioned it, it seems obvious. But, you know, taking away the fact that you lose your health care if you lose your job is going to play a huge role in aiding the efforts of, you know, organized labor to organize workplaces. I mean, Jesus, I feel stupid for not realizing that earlier, but now that you mention it, that's huge.
Yeah, and it would also give up a lot of bargaining space for unions to fight, and, you know, they don't have to worry about fighting for healthcare.
Right.
They could then focus more on wages, they could focus more on safety conditions, other things.
Well, that was a really interesting look at the sort of internals of what's been going on with Whole Foods for the last, I suppose, 10 years now. Hey, it's been sort of a long fight and worsening conditions thanks to Bezos and all of his cronies.
Especially, I mean, for me, the role that like Medicare for All plays in even just union organizing is, as you know, as a Canadian, having free shitty health care myself. I hadn't considered that, so.
And for me as well, one of the takeaways is ways of building potential international lines of solidarity in this union struggle. Because, you know, right around the time that Amazon took over, I think kind of starting right before, but certainly helped by all of that influx of new capital, we saw the massive expansion of Whole Foods into Canadian market, into markets in the UK as well. So all of our listeners in Canada can definitely take heart if you're working at Whole Foods, again, or if you know people who are. There's certainly a lot of food for thought in this episode.
Oh,
ways that you can get involved.
Nice
organizing.
Pun. Nice pun.
Hey, oh, God.
We almost made it all the way through.
Organic certified food for thought.
We were like, brought this to you by close.